Have you seen the price of gold lately? It's hitting all-time highs. And when it comes to investing in gold, check out Noble Gold Investments. They have a track record of excellence that's second to none. Just look at their thousands of five-star reviews on Trustpilot, Google, and the Better Business Bureau. Customers rave about their knowledgeable staff, smooth investment process, and life-changing results, which you can see for yourself online. That's the kind of reputation you can count on. But it's not just about the reviews. Noble Gold Investments truly care about their clients. They take the time to understand your unique needs and goals, and they give expert guidance every step of the way. That level of personalized service is rare in this industry. Look, when it comes to securing your financial future, you can't afford to take chances. Go with the gold company that has earned the trust of countless investors. Visit noblegoldinvestments.com/Tim Pool today and discover why Noble Gold Investments is the only choice for smart, secure gold investments. Or give them a call at 877-646-5347. Again, that number is 877-646-5347. Make sure to head over to timcast.com, click join us, and become a member to support our work directly, because this show is made possible thanks in part to viewers like you. If you like the work we do, become a member, and you'll also get access to uncensored, members-only shows from Timcast IRL, Monday through Thursday at 10 p.m. You can also join our Discord server and talk with like-minded individuals. Now, let's get into that first story. I believe it is extremely likely that this year, Democrats propose some kind of mass amnesty for illegal immigrants. The news we have right now from the Daily Caller: Biden considering granting amnesty, handing out green cards to illegal immigrants. Now, this is limited to start. The reporting is only the illegal immigrants that have been here for a certain amount of time. They would be eligible for green cards. Now, these green cards, it's not going to grant them the right to vote. Certainly in places like New York and San Francisco, they are trying to make it that if you're a legal resident, you can vote, so even non-citizens can vote. Then what they'll do later on is claim that if you live here an illegal resident, not having rights to vote, well, that's discrimination, akin to slavery. But I believe it's extremely likely. Take a look at what they're doing on the southern border. The mass importing of non-citizens, and I'm not saying that to be cute, criminal aliens and any other immigrant. Democrats want to pad their electoral college numbers and their congressional seats. And this is a path, not just, you know, many people say this will create single party rule in this country forever. Not so much. It will create the grounds for, oh, you know, I'm going to say it, civil war. They are effectively importing a different country into this country at the levels they are currently bringing people in. There will come a point where major cities are not comprised of Americans, but massive, to the tunes of millions, non-citizens. Now, let me slow down, because I know all the fact checkers are already screaming and crying. Right now, it's estimated that we have between 10 and 15 million illegal immigrants. But you see, the game they play is they don't tell you how many legal immigrants. I love legal immigration. I think it's fantastic. I love the idea the United States has become this great melting pot where we attract the brain power of other nations and say, why don't you come to our country, bring your talents here? But at a certain level, you begin to erode the underlying fabric of what made that nation work in the first place. And with the level of, I don't care if it's illegal or otherwise, there is an upper limit to the immigration you can bring in. And this is not a personal opinion. This is a fact. Now, the left would argue, immigration's fine. Who cares about their culture or what they think? Well, that's an opinion. My point is, you cannot maintain the underlying fabric of a culture while mass importing people from different cultures. What you will do is, instead of creating a melting pot, you are creating two distinct factions. The international, non-American, non-American traditional faction and the traditional American faction. Now, it is possible that some of the people who come here as children through either legal or illegal immigration end up becoming conservative and saying, I love this country and what this country stands for. And they learn its history. That's true, too. But the levels we are seeing mass illegal immigration into this country, it will begin to displace and disrupt. Now, as we've talked about quite a bit with the context of civil war, in this country, there is a multicultural democracy and a constitutional republic. This country is and always has been a constitutional republic. But there are forces, I would say leftist, that want to make it a multicultural democracy, which, of course, more so just means authoritarian dictatorship. I can explain why very simply. Non-unified communities do not organize around shared principles and thus never dominate the oppressive power. When you have, let's say you have a country, 90% of the people believe in independence. They say no to the king. Boom, you have independence. The American Revolution was not even necessarily a large, I don't believe the majority of this country actually wanted independence. Back when the fighting had begun, which was well before 1776. I mean, the war actually, the fighting had begun long before 1775, but they say the Revolutionary War started in 1775, Lexington and Concord. Most people in this country, I would say, you could actually argue there was a majority of either who did not want revolution or did not want to be involved. That's right. But between the actual factions that were at odds, loyalists versus rebels, the rebels certainly outnumbered the loyalists, and the people in between who said, I don't want to be involved, thus as neutral votes, did not contribute. And so there is this historical, I guess, urban legend that there was it was one third wanted it, one third opposed it, and one third were for it. And it's, that's not true at all. That was just a statement provided in a letter that was basically saying, like, generally speaking, you have around these numbers. But I believe it was actually like in the high 20% that were loyalists. It was in the high 30% that were or maybe even low 40s that were for independence. And the remaining were leave me alone. The point is, the more they bring these people in and offer them amnesty, the less your worldview, your traditions and your values matter because they're being diluted. And what that means is, should this continue, Democrats, I'll put it this way. They're so desperate to give themselves an unconstitutional and illicit advantage in Congress and in the Electoral College vote count that they would erode this country and grind it to dust. And that's what we're seeing right now. Well, let's read the news. Daily Caller reports. President Joe Biden is currently considering granting amnesty to illegal migrants in a bid to act on the worsening immigration crisis, according to Politico. Biden and his administration are weighing several ideas to take a tougher stance on the southern border crisis and illegal immigration, and amid criticisms, he has thus far failed to act on either. The administration could start doling out green cards to illegal immigrants who have long stayed in the U.S., thereby giving them amnesty to stay in the country. Three people familiar with the planning told Politico. The plan would grant migrants who have been in the country for more than 10 years access to the cancellation of removal program, provided that they have relatives who would suffer if they were deported, according to Politico. Migrants would then receive a green card, a permanent residency grant, if they meet the cancellation of removal requirements, and an immigration judge rules in their favor. It would represent a larger effort by Biden to take action on behalf of illegal immigrants who have long stayed in the U.S., the three officials told Politico. All right. And they go to mention that Obama took similar action with DACA. But basically, what is this? Right now, we have numerous illegal immigrants who have committed very serious crimes. They're not being deported. And everyone wonders why. Well, part of the plan Democrats have is you must keep these people in the country at all costs. Not only does it erode people's ability to organize, thus weakening. Look, if you have a country that is 100% unified around its founding traditions, good luck forcing them to do things they don't want to do. If you begin bringing in non-citizens who have no loyalty to the founding documents and principles of the country, now you've got, well, look, 40% of the people are saying this and 60% are saying this. Here's what you need to understand. It's all laid out right here for you in this factcheck.org. I already know that the left is coming out and saying, but Tim is wrong. There's only an estimated 10 million illegal immigrants. There's 330 million people in this country. So what? A tiny portion? 3%, if that? What are we doing the math wrong? 330, so not even? And you think they're going to change the fabric of a nation? Well, that's racist. Let me read this story for you. Elon Musk overstates partisan impact of illegal immigration on house apportionment. This one will explain to you exactly what their game is. They say in claiming that illegal immigration benefits Democrats, entrepreneur Elon Musk vastly overstated its impact on the apportionment of House seats and Electoral College votes. The math, as I understand it, you can research this obviously very easily on the internet. It's pretty straightforward to research this, but my understanding is that the Democrats would lose approximately 20 seats in the House if illegals were not counted in the census, and that's also 20 less electoral votes for president, Musk said in a statement with journalist Don Lemon on March 19th. So illegals absolutely do affect who controls the House and who controls the presidency. It does not affect the Senate. I believe the hard number is, let's do the math, it's 13. The high estimate is 13 seats for Democrats. Now, hold on. There is something wrong with that, in that not all illegal immigrants live in Democrat jurisdictions. So the estimates from actual organizations that track this say that some states, it may be one extra seat, as high as 7. If you go by the hard numbers, it could theoretically be 13. But let me show you how, let me show you the Democrats play the game, and then you'll understand. They're going to say that's inaccurate. In December 2019, the Center for Immigration Studies, a think tank that advocates lower immigration, released an analysis of the impact of legal and illegal immigration on the apportionment of seats in the U.S. House in 2020. Looking only at immigrants in the country illegally, the yardstick Musk employed, CIS estimated they were responsible for the redistribution of 3 seats in 2020. Looking at it in partisan terms, 2 states with a Republican-controlled legislature and a Republican governor, I don't know what that has to do with the House, and 1 state with a divided legislature. Again, we're talking about congressional seats and electoral votes. Electoral votes, it may benefit Republicans, but hold on, we're not done yet. It says a Democratic governor each had fewer House seats. Due to the inclusion of immigrants living in the country illegally in population counts, gaining 1 extra seat were 2 blue states, New York and California, and 1 red state, Texas. In other words, the estimated net impact was that 1 Democratic state picked up a seat from a Republican state. Now let's pause right there. Don't you think it's a problem that Democrats have an extra seat in Congress that literally is just due to illegal immigration? That's what they're saying. 2 seats go to Democrats, 1 goes to Republicans based on illegal immigration, which gives Democrats a net plus 1. Yeah, I think that's wrong. But hold on. I'm keeping you waiting for a minute. They're going to mention a July 2020 analysis by the nonpartisan Pew Research Center based on government data similarly found if unauthorized immigrants in the U.S. were removed from the 2020 census apportionment count, 3 states could each lose a seat. Now, let's stop. You may be saying, Tim, it's just 1 seat. I get it. And that's where amnesty comes in. When Democrats keep giving these immigrants, illegal immigrants or otherwise, speedy paths towards becoming citizens, they are padding their numbers. Let me break it down for you. We can say, based on illegal immigration, Democrats get 1 extra seat. But has anyone asked about the net migration in total as Democrats continually push for more and more migration? What about chain migration? You see, this is where they're not actually talking to you about the total impact of general immigrants. Now, let's play this game. I'll say it again. I'm totally for immigration, 100%. But it has to be done in an economic and strategic manner, meaning people need to come in. We need to help place them places so that they can find jobs and they can succeed. Because the last thing we want is people to come here and then be upset, can't find work, and that happens, or die in the desert. However, here's a problem we have. It's not just illegal immigration. Chain migration is an issue. An individual 20 years ago enters the country illegally and has a child. That child is now an American citizen. The parent is not. Eventually, the parent living here illegally gets deported. Well, that's because Republicans don't want people to come in here illegally. But that child then, at 18, sponsors the parent. That parent now returns legally. Sponsorship can be done by anybody, for the most part, I believe. You can basically assume liability on all public debts of the individual allowing them to come here. So what happens then is you will get a single individual who has family outside the country who will start sponsoring and sponsoring and sponsoring. And one person could legally bring in, asymmetrically, a handful of other people. Now we're looking at that one person accounting towards 5 in the census. The point is this. Our country cannot survive as a country if the population is being replaced. You know, the funny thing is, the Democrats call that a conspiracy theory. No, that's actually a fact. And I'm not arguing like that Democrats have said we want to, you know, make the demographics blue or something. No. I'm talking about the people who fled New York and Florida. I'm sorry, New York to Florida and California to Florida or to Texas. Then Democrats bring in a bunch of illegal immigrants into these cities because they lost so many residents to Florida and Texas and a few other states. I think West Virginia saw a decrease of many more left-leaning individuals. But this is the point. This factcheck.org is talking about illegal immigration. What they're not telling you is that when they grant amnesty to these people, they're no longer illegal immigrants, so they won't count towards those numbers. So in the past 30 years, I think we should do this. How many non-citizens have entered the country, and what is the percentage of overall currently alive immigrants today who arrived in their lifetime, like not their kids, and how does that impact the election? Look, do you believe that elections should be free and fair? To my Democrat friends, do you think that elections should be the best man wins, those who make the right argument? So Joe Biden says, come on, man, you know, we got to get rid of these ATM fees, these junk fees. You like that idea? Okay. Donald Trump says we got to build a wall. Don't like that idea? Okay, that's fine. The issue is, none of that actually matters. The election is not predicated upon whether or not a candidate can convince people to vote for them. It's the Electoral College. And this means that Democrats over the past 30 years just said, get more people in so we have more seats in. Whoa, hold on. Here's how it's supposed to work. A politician goes to Chicago and says, here's my plan. Another politician goes to Chicago and says, here's my plan. Then they go, well, I think politician A had the right answer. The other person says, are you sure you don't think politician B had the right answer? Well, let's debate the idea and then see who does better. Not how it's happening. How it's happening now is Republicans are going, hey, everybody, vote for me. And Democrats are like, why waste our time? Bring a bunch of people and mark them on the census and we own this city in 10 years. And that's where we're at. It's no surprise that Joe Biden is actually considering some degree of amnesty right now. I would not be surprised if later on in this year, there is an attempt by the Biden administration to enact some kind of mass amnesty. They might start at the city level, and it may be soon because it'll have to go through the courts. But they want to get this in now. Why? 2032. They may be thinking, we're not going to win 2024. Maybe we win 2028. Who knows? But 2032, the new census will have kicked in and Democrats will have gained seats unless those who believe in this country just think about it. Now, there are people who are illegal immigrants, DACA recipients, who like Trump, want to stay in this country, believe in this country, and hate the left. And that presents an interesting predicament. Unfortunately, the majority of people who come to this country illegally don't know and don't care. This is true based on the polling. They don't know and they don't care. They're here because there's PlayStation, because there's Buffalo Wild Wings. And those are quotes. I'm not being cute. That was a quote given to the LA Times. The illegal immigrants in the caravan said, I want PlayStation and Buffalo Wild Wings. How do you think those people are going to vote? Well, they won't. They're not citizens. That's the important distinction. But they will, in 2030, in the next census, give Democrats an advantage. Democrats... It really is simple. They keep saying, how many seats are they getting from illegal immigration? And let's just say, according to CIS, they're correct, and it's a net positive of one. That's one too many. That's not fair. But the reality is much simpler. Ronald Reagan offered amnesty. Let me tell you. You have people born in this country. Some of these people were forcefully brought to this country and were enslaved. Now, I ask you, who deserves to inherit this country? Is it the descendants of those who founded it? The descendants of those who were freed from the shackles in a civil war? I know it's more complicated than that. Or between and the Native Americans who are already here, these people all throughout the history of the United States in this conflict? Or should we give the inheritance of this country to people who just showed up last month. Something doesn't make sense, does it? I'd argue this. Let's take it to progressive. The ideas of reparations coming from BLM activists have more merit in this country than illegal immigrants. Someone who's not from this country who says, I think we should do X, meaningless. An American whose family's been here since the 1700s and they're a Black Lives Matter activist leftist. Okay, well, their worldview may be wrong. I disagree with their political opinions, but they have more of a right to express that and vote because, you know, they're part of this country, whether we like it or not. I mean, their opinions are their opinions, and those opinions are allowed. Maybe we disagree, and that's good. But that's not what we're dealing with right now. And I think a lot of people in the Black community in various cities, and Black communities in various cities, are realizing this. In Chicago, many Black voters are saying we're being replaced. They're bringing in Latin American, Hispanic, and Central American individuals to pad the electorate in these places, and they're ignoring the plight of those who actually live there. This is not a tenable situation. It means that as we move forward, you may find in this country there will be pre-American and post-American. Those are the factions. Or we should say post-American and American. I think it's fair to say that the illegal immigrants who are coming in and the activists who support them are post-Americans. They want the end of this country. They don't care about this country. They don't know what that means. You take a look at these young people who are entitled. They hate America. They don't know anything about America. But they certainly want to see America destroyed. They have no idea what their lives would be like. They seem to think that were they to destroy this country, they would then live in this utopia where they have free food. And it's all because of America. I'd imagine a lot of this comes from China, a lot of this propaganda, potentially Russia or otherwise. But we're looking at what's going to happen in this country right now. New York Post, Border Patrol union president's warning. Biden deflating border numbers, mass amnesty is coming. Well, far be it for me to actually care about what the Border Patrol says. They're knowingly engaging in child sex trafficking, so not really all that interested. But this is where we are at, and the warning is in plain sight. Joe Biden is likely going to offer up some amnesty, various degrees, like DACA or otherwise, because they want to make sure that if they lose in November, they can retain as many illegal immigrants as possible because the goal is 2030. It's the long game. The census in 2030, it's 10 years. And it feels like a long time to some people. But you're 50 or 60. You're like, hey, look, 10 years can go by in the blink of an eye. And then they're going to redraw the lines. The cities will become more and more entrenched with people who don't know and don't care. And the residents who are from there, they're not too happy about it. Women are now getting punched in the head in New York randomly. Well, there's your equality for you. I hope you enjoy it. And then in the end, there will eventually be, whether anyone likes it or not, there's going to be a conflict in this country because there's going to be too many people who don't care about this country and too few who do. Right now, the majority of people in this country like this country. But what happens when it's 50-50? And then what happens when that 50% that hates the country votes to destroy it and the other 50 says, no, you won't? I think it's obvious. But I'll leave it there. Next segment's coming up at 1 p.m. on this channel. Thanks for hanging out, and I'll see you all then. Donald Trump fraud, John Stewart, the overvaluing of his apartment. Let's break this down. Because the controversy continues, John Stewart has responded. We did talk about this last night on Timcast IRL. And this has to do with John Stewart criticizing Kevin O'Leary when Kevin O'Leary said Trump did not commit fraud. And then me calling out a misstatement, a factual inaccuracy by John Stewart, which has now been wildly conflated and incorrectly assessed by numerous people in the media because they looked at one tweet and they didn't actually watch my show or any of the shows we do. My friends, let me break down for you the gist of the Trump fraud case in greater detail and explain to you why John Stewart is wrong and what Letitia James has done to Donald Trump. The fraud case against Trump, it is wrong. I'm not saying Trump is absolutely innocent of all things all the time or anything like that, but certainly what we are dealing with right now does not rise to the level of any kind of civil violation. And what we are seeing is the New York government stretching their arguments to target Trump and the Trump family for political reasons. Now, we know Letitia James basically campaigned on, I'm going to go after Trump. But let's start from the beginning for those that don't know what's happening, and we'll address the John Stewart controversy. Kevin O'Leary, Shark Tank. He came out after this ruling where they said they could seize Trump's properties. Kevin O'Leary says this is insane. Trump did what literally every single real estate developer does. None of this is out of the ordinary. They're targeting him, claiming it was fraud. His lenders were all made whole, knew everything, did their own due diligence, all fact. But wait, you see, here's a key detail. Judge Engoron ruled summarily that Donald Trump committed fraud, meaning there was no evidentiary hearing. He received the documents and said, you know what? Trump committed fraud. Bang. A separate trial was held. In that trial, Trump's lender said, not only did we do our own due diligence, we actually undervalued based on what Trump said. That's what we do. Trump even stated in his financial documents to these banks, these may be wildly out of balance or incorrect evaluations. Why? You go to a bank and you say, I have this rooster. It was given to me. It's one of a kind. I think its value is probably $1,000. I could be way off. You do your assessment. Tell me what you think. The bank then comes, takes a look at the rooster and says, we're going to say $100. And then you negotiate a loan. Everything we're hearing is greatly exaggerated, but I'm going to break this down for you and show you the quotes. So Kevin O'Leary says this is totally normal. And what they're doing now, threatening to seize property, is going to drive people in real estate out of the state. It's going to destroy the market. Oh, let me show you the absurdity of the New York real estate market. So here's where I chime in. In a quote, John Stewart said that Letitia James knew Trump overvalued his properties because when it came time to pay taxes, he undervalued those properties. Now, here's the funny thing. In response to John Stewart's incorrect statement, I tweeted, did John Stewart commit fraud when he sold the property for $17.5 million, despite only paying taxes on a valuation of $748,000? To which all of these people in the woke press and all these, you know, normie types or whatever say, what do you mean, Tim? You're conflating property value and tax assessed value. No, John Stewart did that. Man, it is really hard to break through the lies when you have disingenuous people. So I'll show you this real quick. We'll go through some of what the Blaze says, and then we'll break down exactly why John Stewart is wrong, the point I was intending to make, what John Stewart said, and then I'm going to talk to you about property values in New York and a key moment from the Trump fraud case, basically destroying the entire case, and the judge still would not dismiss it. So the Blaze actually has a really great breakdown. On the Daily Show Monday, John Stewart discussed where Trump's civil fraud case presently stands. Stewart argued that Trump's supposed over-evaluation of his properties was not victimless, intimating further that those who do likewise in pursuit of profit are immoral, if not outright criminal. The New York Post and critics online intimated this week that Stewart might have his own phantasmal victims of his own. In response to the accusations of hypocrisy, Stewart lashed out Wednesday. However, his defense fell flat, absent an adoring audience ready to laugh on cue. You see, here's the thing. Let me read the quote. What did Trump actually do to earn this penalty? Stewart said Monday, referencing. Well, it turns out that for a decade, whenever Trump wanted to get a loan or make a deal, he would illegally inflate the value of his real estate. Stop. Loaded. Illegally. Not true. You are allowed to make mistakes on evaluations, and you are allowed to then say, just so you know, we could be wrong about a lot of this. Here's the important thing. This goes back to the, is Donald Trump wrong or a liar? Now, I think Donald Trump lies. I certainly do. And I certainly think he's wrong about a lot of things. How you determine the two is difficult. And from a morally, philosophically sound approach, you have to prove intent when you're trying to convict someone of a crime. In this, the question is, with as large as the Trump organization is, and with as many people involved as there are, how involved was Trump personally? Did he personally do these evaluations? Does signing off on something 30 years ago change something you're signing off on now? And let me just wrap that up. Just because there is a document that was signed by Trump or anyone else does not prove criminal culpability. There are often times when you're running a business where you have a manager come to you and say, here's what we believe to be true. And you go, okay, I'm looking through it. Looks good to me. The best of my abilities, I'll sign off on it. But you could be wrong. So Trump stated numerous times in his deposition, I said outright, this could be wildly wrong. Now, of course, what happens is liberals then come out and they go, but Trump claimed his penthouse was 30,000 square feet, but then in his taxes said it was only 11,000 square feet. Full stop. The government does the tax assessment. Trump's evaluation on the property value is different from what the tax assessor says. Tax assessed space in a building could be different from market value. And the entirety of New York City has this ridiculous and I would say downright fraudulent tax assessment scheme. The city is probably doing it to attract investment. And if the city allows it, then it's not fraudulent and it's not illegal. Let me start here. I'll read this. Here's what he says. Whenever Trump, he would illegally inflate the value of his real estate. For instance, suggesting that his 11,000 square foot penthouse was a 30,000 square foot penthouse. We all do it. I mean, on my license, I'm not listed as 5'7". I'm listed as 30,000 square feet. Boy, there's a lot of context missing from this. One, I don't know. You're going to have to sit down and talk to Trump and ask how this happens. First, it could be Trump lied. And he said, just say it's 30,000 so we can inflate the value substantially. And some have actually said, we probably did inflate its value. Does that mean it's illegal? No. Now, hold on. It is possible it is. It is possible they were like, tell him it's bigger, that's worth more than it is, and maybe they won't notice. Certainly, I would argue that's criminal. Now, hold on. We don't know that's the case. Let me tell you about the property I have, because I think what they're doing here in New York is targeting people who don't know anything about real estate and property. I sit right now in a building. We call it the Castle because it's a big house. I love the leftists who are like, Tim Pool lives in a compound with a bunch of people. No, people don't. There's a couple people who live here because there's a separate property. There's a separate section of the building. But this is an office with a studio in it and a green room and skateboarding. And it is not principally a domicile. Now, that being said, how would I divvy up square footage? I could tell you this. This is a 16,000 square foot property. And then I could file some paperwork somewhere else saying it's a 10,000 square foot property and an 8,000 square foot property. And you'll say, ha ha, Tim, you're admitting that you commit fraud. Well, first of all, I didn't say I actually did do that. I'm saying I could. Why? There is total square footage. There is commercial, usable, domestic. There's a bunch of different metrics by which you judge or are paying taxes on the square footage. In fact, my friends, there are even portions of this building that are unfinished. And so if I were to say the total interior space is 10,000 square feet, I would then say the total livable could be 8,000. I could say we have an unfinished portion, brown back, which is another 1,000 square feet. So if someone came to me and said, what's the total interior square feet? And I said 11,000, meaning the property is worth X. Then I was asked later, what's the total livable square feet? I said 8,000. That's not lying. That's different. So the question is, in the nitty gritty, by all means, liberals, tell me that Trump was saying total square footage and total square footage, and they were wrong. And I'll say, okay, now the question is, was it Trump personally? This is important, I know. And you're going to, if an employee didn't get it wrong and they said it was wrong, it really falls down to the due diligence of the lender to check. For all we know, somebody confused two different properties. That's the mistake. Trump's got so many properties, so you have to prove intent. And I'm fine if you do, but there was no trial. The judge ruled summarily that Trump committed fraud. They didn't even have an evidentiary. They didn't have a trial to go over claims and evidence. And certainly when Deutsche Bank actually came and testified, they said, no, we did our own due diligence. We actually reduced the valuation that Trump had given us, determined what we thought it was actually worth, and then issued a loan based on that. So we were fully aware of what was going on, and we were not tricked. We were not defrauded. I got the AP story right here. Ain't no joke. Banker involved in big loans, Trump's company, testifies for his defense in civil fraud trial, outright saying, we weren't defrauded. We did the due diligence and we knew what we were lending against. And they actually stated in one instance, Trump said he was worth $6 billion. They said, maybe 2.5, maybe even lower, maybe even 850. and they made the determination they were not tricked. That's the lie. Here's the important part. Let's go. Stewart said Letitia James, quote, knew that Trump's property values were inflated because when it came time to pay taxes, Trump undervalued the very same properties. It was all part of a very sophisticated real estate practice known as lying. And that's where my tweet comes in. Now, I'll send it over to Mediaite. These people are so lost in the story. They've not listened to what I actually said about this. They don't know what's actually happening. And what's happening is this. My statement about John Stewart committing fraud has nothing to do with Donald Trump and only to do with that quote. Stewart perhaps made a mistake. He has bad writers and doesn't understand what he's talking about. Stewart here conflated property tax assessment and market value assessment. So I highlighted his own property and said, oh, ho, look who did the same thing. They then deflect and go, Trump was an insurrectionist. This is what John Stewart says. Trump was an insurrectionist and he had a fake college. I'm like, sure. Argue all those things. Trump can't pay taxes based on his own personal assessment. Property taxes are set by a tax assessor, which is government. Now, as it turns out, let's scroll down. He said Stewart suggested the banks were victimized, having apparently been paid back at lower interest rates. He also suggested that since money isn't infinite, a person seeking loans who might have given a more honest evaluation could hypothetically have lost out. Sure. According to the host, when it comes to the investment community, in pursuit of profit, there is no rule that cannot be bent. No blah, 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 blah. We get it. We get it. We get it. We have this from Simon Atiba. He says, for those that did not watch what John Stewart said, here it is. But keep in mind that it has now been found that he overvalued his NYC home by 829% after slamming Trump's civil cases, not victimless. Stewart criticized on Tuesday podcast host Tim Pool. Hey, that's me. Dug up a 2014 New York Times article concerning his sale of a 6,280 square foot New York City penthouse to financier Parag Pandey for $17.5 million. The article noted he bought the property for $5.8. Poole tweeted, did John Stewart commit fraud when he sold his penthouse? I'm directly targeting upon John Stewart saying Trump paid lower taxes. That's how they knew the properties were overvalued. Wrong. The property assessment for taxes was done by the city. Trump could not have chosen to do that. That is a false statement. If you want to argue Trump committed fraud, we'll have the debate on that. I am simply stating John Stewart was wrong. The New York Post sees upon Spool's suggestion and obtained obsessor records. Stop! I actually obtained those records and I tweeted them out. And I included them in our second segment on this. The reason why I didn't tweet out the initial full assessor document was because it contained other information I didn't think was necessary. But later did tweet out the full thing, including the address included by the New York Times when we ran it on this show and Timcast IRL. The actual assessed value by the city was $1.8 million. According to the Post, the actual assessor evaluation was even lower. Okay, now let's play this argument. You've got Democrats saying the banks were defrauded because Trump lied to get a better loan. There is no functional distinction between lying for cash for a loan and lying for cash for a sale. Either way, an individual assumes a debt. It's nonsensical. If Trump said my property is worth $1 billion, the bank then went, well, we just blindly believe you. Here's $1 billion. John Stewart went, my property's worth 17.5. And the guy went, okay, well, I believe you. Here's a 17.5. The argument is that when it came to selling a property, the person who wanted to buy it chose to give that money for it. As if a loan is and debt is anything different. When Donald Trump proposed, they give him this money. They said, yes, they chose to do it. They lent him the money. In either circumstance, the individual either buying the property or giving a loan has a requirement to their own due diligence, which both parties in these scenarios did. So I am only facetiously arguing that John Stewart committed fraud because of his own statement. I know that may be hard for many of these leftists and liberals to understand because they're not quite smart people. Fine. The point is this. If John Stewart had an assessed value, market value, not tax assessed value, at $1.8 million, went to someone and said, trust me, it's 17.5. And they said, well, okay, I guess. Then went to a bank and said, he says 17.5. John Stewart's lying tricked a buyer into getting a loan from a bank. So the bank and the buyer are both victims. And the buyer lost $4 million. Now, hold on. It's absurd to argue, right? The bank did their own due diligence. They chose to give Trump the money. Even stating in court, they lowered the value that Trump had claimed. This buyer knew what he was buying, looked at it, did his due diligence, said, I'm going to come up with that $17.5 million. How in any way is this different? But Trump said there was more square footage on this to inflate his net worth. And the bank came back and said, yeah, you were wrong about that. And Trump said, well, we did tell you we could probably be wrong. It's ridiculous. Here we go. There's more. The Post alleged that Stewart had done precisely what he accused Trump Monday of doing, paying, quote, significantly lower property taxes, which were calculated based on the assessor evaluation price. This is a large component of John Stewart's argument. John Stewart was arguing that Trump was not paying his fair share of taxes. Trump's not paying his taxes. Neither are you, John. Let me show you this from Zillow. I pulled up a random property from New York sold for $12.7 million. Zestimate set is $12.9 million. What do you think the tax assessed value the city of New York gave it? Well, public tax history shows its tax assessment was $635,000. Okay, let's make this argument. Now, in New York, they do it on a percentage basis. It could be, depending on the class, it could be 6% up to 45%. So, sure, maybe this is the 6% assessment for taxes. Okay. There are numerous properties in New York that function on this principle. Now, as for John Stewart, his property may be a class one. I don't know. But the tax assessed value, the market value was 1.8. The government said the market value was 1.8 million, and thus he would pay 748K. According to the county records, it looks like it was a class four property, which they list at 45%. So it seems like John Stewart knew when he bought the property at 5.8, it was worth substantially more, considering he went to sell it at 17.5, yet still paid taxes with his name on the assessor records at 748K. Pay your fair share, John. But this is New York City. It's how they operate. So I'm not going to argue it's illegal if the city knows this is how we do it. It's how everybody does it. And if it's how everybody does it, then it's not literally, it's not functionally illegal, but it may be on paper. The question then becomes, why is a tax assessor giving these lower numbers on these properties unless they're cutting a deal in the back room? Let's keep it quite simple. Donald Trump goes to a bank and says, here's my assets. Here's why I think I'm worth this. The bank then does due diligence and says, yeah, you were wrong. Trump says in his deposition, we told them these valuations were probably way off. They said, okay, well, we'll give you a lower evaluation. Deutsche Bank testified to that. But the judge had already summarily determined that Trump committed fraud. So it was done. They weren't allowed to argue they didn't commit fraud. So even when Trump had people come in and say, actually, no, he didn't commit fraud. We did our due diligence and we told him he was wrong and lowered the valuation and gave him a different loan. And Trump said, OK, they're like, no, he lied in the first place, or he was wrong. They're trying to claim that Trump lied intentionally. But this is ridiculous. It's ridiculous because of the idea of due diligence and because of the heavy burden of proving intent. By all means, you may have the personal bias and the view inside you that Trump, no, he lied. He lied on purpose. And I say, okay. He lied on purpose in a document that also included the disclaimer, these evaluations and facts may be off. They may be wrong. And then the bank said, well, then we'll come in and check for ourselves. And they said, you're free to do that. And then they did. And then they said, we think it's worth less. And Trump said, okay, I'm sorry. That's not fraud. That's insane to claim that's fraud. But here we go. The Post noted that New York assessor valuation on Stewart's former penthouse is the exact same citation method and metric that New York Attorney General Letitia James used to value Trump's private and personal properties and then sued him for inflating those assets. That was even the argument made by John Stewart. Parag Pandey apparently sold the property in 2021 at just over $13 million, a 26% loss. Sarah Rumpf of Mediaite suggested that it was unfair to suggest Stewart had overvalued his property, certainly not by a staggering 829%. This is where we get into the I did not do my due diligence phase of Sarah Rumpf, Mediaite, and the media, and the problem we face with trying to understand reality. In this, first of all, they call me an online troll. Yeah, I think 2 million followers, one of the largest podcasts in the country and one of the largest viewerships of a live show. I think we on average, the highest viewership for a live show on YouTube, not trying to humble brag or anything, but certainly saying online troll. The New York Post made a curious decision to promote Tim Pool's laughably false accusation that Trump committed some kind of fraud regarding the 2014 sale of his Manhattan penthouse. The trick they're playing on you right now is to argue that I made a literal statement when I was breaking a false statement by Jon Stewart. First of all, I didn't say he did. I said, and I love this. My tweet, which I don't even know if they include. Here we go. I said, did he commit fraud? Because I'm not an idiot. And I said, I am shocked, shocked. And who did he defraud? And I showed these values, poking at the segment he did on his show. Perhaps you should actually watch my nightly show and my podcast before making an assessment on a response to Jon Stewart. What this individual then goes on to say is that we're conflating. What's happening here is Pool, Jacob, and other critics attacking Stewart are conflating three different types of real estate values. No, I am being facetious to target Jon Stewart's inappropriate and Letitia James's inappropriate conflation of different values. The actual market value of property, the property's taxable value assessed by a government agency, or documentation about a property's value submitted to a lender for the purpose of securing a loan. No, and I'll break it all down for you right now. Let's roll, baby. Banker involved in big loans to Trump's company testifies for his defense in civil fraud trial. When Deutsche Bank loaned Donald Trump's company hundreds of millions of dollars, the bank always followed its own guidelines that include checking out information that would-be borrowers provide. An executive testified Tuesday at the former president's civil fraud trial. Okay, there's so much to break down in this. The important fact here is that Donald Trump testified, I believe three times, may have been two times, that when we submitted this information, we told the bank the evaluations and values in this could be way off. They may or may not be exaggerated or off. And the bank said, it's fine because we do our own evaluations, which they did. They go to mention Deutsche Bank reviewed the financial statements before making the loans, a pathway, they say, through its department that works with rich individuals. Democrats argue that because Trump got the loan based on his personal net worth and not against commercial real estate, he was securing more favorable terms. Yes. And the bank knew that. The argument from Letitia James that Trump overvalued his real estate to the bank, going outside of commercial real estate lending and to rich individuals department so that he would get cheaper, lower interest rates. But the bank knew exactly what Trump was doing and even stated, this is the Associated Press reporting this. He says, at times the bank pegged Trump's wealth at several billion dollars lower than he did, according to documents and testimony. In 2019, for example, Trump's financial statements listed his net worth at $5.8 billion, which the bank adjusted down to $2.5 billion. Williams said such differences weren't necessarily unusual or alarming. It's a conservative measure to make these adjustments, characterizing them as standard and a stress test. The attorney general's office, however, maintained such adjustments were never intended to account for alleged fraud. That's ridiculous and not true. When the bank, they say Trump acted as the guarantor for the loans and was quick to act when the bank raised concerns that properties weren't generating enough cash to make payments. This is what the banker testified. At what point Trump moved $8.6 million into the Washington Hotel's coffers after its cash flow fell short of a requirement. The payments, no payments were missed, and the loans were never found to be in default. So let's start this over. Donald Trump wants a loan. He goes to Deutsche Bank's rich individuals department saying, I'm wealthy. I'm worth billions of dollars. I've got all this property and all these companies. I need a loan of this amount of money so that I can purchase this building. The building in question is the DC Hotel, for which Trump generated for himself personally $128 million. He then says to them, here's a list of all my assets. Boom. It may or may not be off. Some of it may or may not be exaggerated. Trump testified that was the case. The bank then said, OK, well, we're going to evaluate these documents and go through them and see if they're true or not. The bank then came back and said, actually, Trump, we think you're not worth this much. So we're not going to give you a loan at this higher rate. We're going to give you a loan at this number, but we think we're good. Later, the bank came to Trump and said, we think that you're not good. Your cash requirements are not being met. And Trump said, let me put the money into the accounts and make sure it stays whole. And they said, OK, the bank got paid back. Trump generated profit. Everybody was happy. The bank did their due diligence. They knew the documents given to them may have been exaggerated. There was no lie. There was no malintent. Democrats in this case are stripping context to make you think Trump gave the documents to the bank, said all of this is 100% true. The bank went, well, I'll take your word for it, gave him the loan. And then they say, even though they made money, Trump was lying to secure a loan. And that's the fraud in question. The only problem is the fact that in real estate and in business, Companies choose to engage in the business. So if John Stewart, let's go back to the main point, argues that a property valued by the state at $1.8 million, for which he's paying taxes on an evaluation of $748,000, if he attests to a buyer, actually it's $17.5 million, and if you want it, you got to give me it. The guy says, sure. Turns out the property wasn't worth that. It was worth way less, and the guy lost a bunch of money. Now, of course, you'd argue that's silly. The buyer chose to buy the property. Well, I argue that's silly. The bank chose to buy the debt from Trump. There's no functional difference. The bank said, do we want to purchase $200 million in debt from Donald Trump? His business, based on our evaluation, looks good, and it looks like he'll make it back. And when they raised concerns, Trump said, don't worry about it, and made sure it was met. So the argument here is the purchasing of debt versus the purchasing of a physical property. In each instance, we argue the buyer has a responsibility to do their own due diligence. John Stewart could be argued, said, $17.5 million, that's the value, and that's what I want to sell it for. But he was paying taxes on $748,000, and the city said it was only worth $1.8. I want to make sure I stress that very, very much so for our friends over at Mediaite. The actual market value of the property, what someone would be willing to pay for it. The property's taxable value, full stop. There's a fourth you missed, and that is the market value determined by the state. That's how they determine the tax assessed value. New York said John Stewart's property was only 1.8. So who's lying? I think it's fair to say you cannot go after Trump and accuse him of undervaluing a property on taxes when you know that the city does their own evaluation. And that when he goes to a lender and asks them to voluntarily give him money in exchange for something, in this instance, the debt, you say, well, but the buyer knew what he was buying, but Deutsche Bank didn't know what they were buying. What? Both have to do their due diligence. Trump said, here's my list of assets. And this is the best part. We can't even conflate the properties of John Stewart with the assets of Donald Trump. They're not one for one. What is being purchased by the bank is the debt of Trump. What they want are assurances that he can actually pay it back. John Stewart is selling a physical property. The assurances of the buyer is that the property will transfer over properly. I am not literally suggesting John Stewart committed fraud. I'm poking a hole in the statement that they knew Trump committed fraud because he paid taxes at a lower rate. One singular and granular element of the whole fraud case. And more importantly, one granular element of what John Stewart said on TV. Now, I'm not going to sit here for 3 hours and break all of this down again. It is very difficult. But let me just wrap up by saying this. The problem of the media and the difficulties we all have in figuring out what is true. The Donald Trump fraud case happens. Millions of details, accusations, and potential that Trump maybe did commit fraud. I don't know. There's a summary judgment, not a trial. The trial that we got was after the fact, and it was about falsifying documents and not about whether Trump committed fraud. It was a separate thing. So what we have here is, let's separate the underlying fraud case. What we have here is John Stewart being wrong, saying on TV, and let me pull up the quote again from The Blaze so I can show you. Going back up, Stewart suggested the banks were victimized. And let's see. Here we go. Letitia James knew that Trump's property values were inflated because when it came time to pay taxes, Trump undervalued the very same properties. False. Trump didn't value tax assessment. The city did. That's the point I made initially. What happens then is John Stewart deflects with this nonsensical statement. And then leftist media comes out and claims I'm literally accusing John Stewart of fraud when what I'm really doing is mocking him for his false statement. Now, here's the problem. The people who read Mediaite are going to make the assumption I was literally accusing John Stewart of fraud. The point is, what Trump did and what John Stewart did, neither of which is fraud and are different. John Stewart claimed Trump evaluated his own taxes. Now I've got people tweeting being like, Tim Pool doesn't realize the government evaluates the taxes, not John Stewart. And I'm like, duh. John Stewart didn't realize that. That's the whole point. So for those of you that actually watch my show and saw my actual breakdown of what this was, you know the truth. There may or may not be something underlying the Trump fraud case. Sure, I certainly think there isn't based on what we're seeing. And I made that argument for it ad nauseum. But what we're seeing here is the media breakdown for political power. This woman from Sarah Rumpelman from Mediaite, writes the opinion piece without actually even looking into anything I've said about Jon Stewart, for which she might go, oh, that's what he meant. And here we are. Now, because the internet and Poe's Law, and oh, don't get me wrong, I totally understand this. I tweet silly, nonsensical things all the time. But I think it's fair to point out, I quite literally did not accuse him of committing fraud. I said, did he commit fraud when he sold his penthouse? He listed it for this, but it was valued at this. Who did he defraud? I am shocked. And this is immediately following Jon Stewart's show where he claimed they knew Trump committed fraud because he undervalued when it came time to pay taxes. There you go. Have fun, Jon Stewart. I'm sure you'll write something up for your show on Monday and you'll get it grievously wrong. But I hope this was informative for all of you. Thanks for hanging out. Next segment will be at 4 p.m. and I'll see you all then. All right, so apparently there's big news out of New York that women keep getting punched in the face. They're just walking down the street and then people punch them in the face. Apparently they're saying the knockout game may be back. This is a game played in New York amongst, I don't know, hoodlums, ruffians, banditos. I guess they're not stealing anything, so they're not bandits. But the game is just to run up and attack people. Welcome to the streets of New York, I guess. I got to be honest, guys. I know a lot of people are talking about this story, but I really just don't care that women are getting punched in the face. I literally don't. You know, the thing about New York is that it's a liberal stronghold. You can't have a gun. The criminals are being let out. And these people just keep voting for it over and over and over again. And so I'm at this point, when I've described this before, where, like, listen, I ain't even mad, okay? You voted for it. You live the way you want to live. Who's to complain? Now, me, you know, I live out here in West Virginia. And West Virginia, we have constitutional carry. So I have guns, lots of them. And I ain't had no problems. Now, don't get me wrong, like, our business has been targeted and stuff, and the police help come and help take care of that stuff. It's not always been perfect. We had the cops show up here. And even though I said, do not enter my property, they said, we're going to do whatever we want. That's not fun. But for the most part, with we're about to completely relocate in like a week to our new studio, which is like we're like half there. And, you know, my attitude is ain't nobody coming onto my property and messing with me because, you know, the way we handle things out here is very different to the way they handle things out there. So for these ladies posting these videos talking about how they're getting punched in the face. I mean, my attitude is plainly just like, yeah, okay, I mean, that's great. Like, if a guy came to me and said, I voted for them to build a statue of Pac-Man, and then later he posts a video where he's like, they're building a statue of Pac-Man, I'd be like, "That's good for you. You know what I mean? Like, I think the problem a lot of conservatives have is that because they don't want to live this way, they immediately assume this is out of the ordinary for what the average voter in New York wanted. Now, let me stress this. These women may not be happy they're getting punched in the face, for sure. But the majority of people in New York who with smiles on their faces keep voting for this. Yo, I watched the protests. I'm not even being cute. These protesters come out and they're like, yes, we want the criminals to be let go. The cops are bad. All right, well, let's hear what these ladies have to say about getting punched in the face.
You guys, I was literally just walking and a man came up and punched me in the face. Oh my God, it hurts so bad. I can't even talk. Literally, I fell to the ground and now this giant goose egg is forming and I'm like, oh my God, it looks so crazy.
So I just got punched in the face walking home. I was literally like leaving class. I turned the corner and I was looking down and I was looking at my phone and like texting, and then out of nowhere, this man just came up and hit me in the face. I'm like actually in shock right now. I'm just like walking home because what else do you do?
So I have fallen victim to the men in New York City lifting an elbow or trying to punch innocent girls on the street, except I wasn't on my phone. I was with my coworkers walking in Times Square. So be safe out there. It's my first TikTok.
Wow. They have like huge welts on their head. That's crazy. NBC News says several women have come forward on social media sharing incidents in which they said they were punched by men while walking the streets of downtown Manhattan in broad daylight in the last month. Multiple videos were uploaded. One woman said she was assaulted walking from class. New York police said they made an arrest in one of the incidents and are investigating another. While police wouldn't confirm that the incidents described in the TikTok videos are those they're investigating, they shared that they're looking into cases that are very similar. Officials said it's unclear whether the two incidents they are investigating are connected. The videos have circulated amid widespread perceptions in the U.S. that crime is rising, despite recent FBI data that suggests it decreased last year. Concerns over public safety have continued to loom in New York City. A series of recent high-profile crimes in the subway prompted Governor Hochul to send the National Guard in. Blah, blah, blah. Look, come on. I'm not going to play this game, okay? We got New York City Council member Amanda Farias saying, where are the men calling this out? Well, I need only scroll down to show you the picture of the man who was calling. Oh, there he is. Oh, look at this. Everyone's just posting pictures of this here feller. Daniel Penny. Was it Penny? Yeah, Perry. I thought it was Penny. Everybody always confuses Perry and Penny. I thought it was Penny, right? Because I think Perry is the guy in Austin. Let's just double check, because there's two guys. There's two guys, believe it or not. Yeah, it's Daniel Penny. Perry is the guy who was in Austin and the far left came up to his car and the guy had a rifle and at low ready. So the guy shot him and, you know, he went to jail. Penny is the guy who tried to save women from being attacked by a dude in the subway. Yeah, well, he's going to jail, probably. And I'll give him some. Here we go. The Women's Caucus NYC says, we are deeply disturbed and concerned about widespread reports of attacks against women in New York City that have been confirmed. No, you know, just shut your mouths, okay? Just shut up, politicians. You don't get to vote for this, scream and beg for it, and then get all mad when it happens. You know, I don't even care. Look, did you know that men are 5 times more likely to be the victims of violent crime than women? But certainly the squeaky wheel gets the grease, so the only thing we ever hear in the media is like, oh, poor women. People have done these social experiments all the time. You got one video that went viral, particularly viral, where it's a man and woman walking down the street and the guy's berating the woman and then shoves her. And a bunch of guys run up like, hey, man, don't you touch her. And then you have the inverse. A guy and a woman are walking down the street and the woman's slapping the guy, hitting him and screaming at him. And he's going like this and everyone's laughing. Yeah. But, you know, it's because we get it. The reason why ain't nobody intervened when the man was being hit is because women on average are women are substantially weaker than men on average. Not every single woman, not every single man, but on average, right? You look at the grip strength, and we love talking about this one. The average grip strength of a man is higher than the strongest grip strength of a woman. This is not an exaggeration. There are certainly women with more grip strength than men, but the highest average bell curve for grip strength among women is lower than the average point for men. So okay, what I'm trying to say is the strongest women, the highest bracket for grip strength among women is below average male grip strength. And that's not surprising. So of course, when it comes to men who have more bone density, more muscle mass, typically taller, more skin collagen, yeah, we're trying to protect women. Women, when y'all overwhelmingly vote for these policies that lead to this, ain't nobody going to come run to your defense. If there's a burning building and there's a woman inside screaming, stay away from me, I'd be like, okay. If there is a woman who lives in her house and she's flicking matches and I say to her, like, I think it's a really bad idea that you're flicking matches. And she goes, I want the right as a woman to flick matches. I'll say, okay. Then she lights a fire up, the building goes up, and I'm not going in there. You expect me to run in there? No, get out of here, man. Look, it's teamwork. It's responsibility. You want the hero to save the day? Do you want the big, strong man to run and kick the door down and rescue you from the fire? Then you have to at least agree to be responsible. This is the funny thing. You see all these videos? They do these man in the street interviews where numerous people have done this now. They walk up to men, and they go to men and say, do men need women? And all the men go, yeah, of course. Then they walk up to women and they go, do women need men? And they'll go, no way, women don't need men. It's like, okay, have fun. I ain't going to jump to your defense walking around New York City, you getting punched in the face. Now, I know not all of these women who are getting punched in the face are liberals. I didn't say that. I'm saying you still choose to live there. We know this is happening. I ain't about to rush to anybody's defense. Look, at this point, we are dealing with geographic hyperpolarization and no good answers. You can simply leave. You know, it's sad to see, but New York is far gone. My concern is the people who choose to stay there are propping the system up. And maybe the fastest way to end the fracturing of New York is to get out. Let New York be overrun by criminals and those lacking merit. And then you leave. But I'll tell you this for the time being. NYPD, I find, is laughable. Like, why would you want to? It's so insane. You can't afford to live in New York and you're getting paid this garbage rate to be a cop. Yeah, people are willing to do anything. Let New York crumble. A lot of people say, no, it's one of our great cities. But OK, fine. Fair point. I'm looking at this and I'm like, ladies, you come to West Virginia. If I'm walking down the street and you're walking down the street in West Virginia and a man comes up and hits you, I will intervene. Because we don't stand for that out here. But in New York, they do. And they vote for it over and over and over again. I got to be honest, though, my friends. Ain't no lady in West Virginia need me to run and intervene on their behalf. You know why? Because she's probably got like a 380 in her purse or in her hip holster or, you know, on her belt. Guy comes up to her. She draws her gun and goes, can I help you? And the guy's like, nothing. So that's why that stuff doesn't happen here. Because the ladies out here be strapped. Constitutional carry. And if they're not, they walk right in. They fill out their NICS form. And then they take their gun. And, you know, a 380, small little thing. I mean, even a tiny little 22. Some guy's going to walk up to a lady out in West Virginia. And she could pull out a Desert Eagle. And he's going to be like, can you handle that? And she goes, want to find out? Oh, I love this state. I'm not confident that you can actually fire that Desert Eagle. And she'll be like, well, you're more than welcome to see if I can or can't. Yeah, it's look, there's a lot of crime in West Virginia. That's true. There's violent crime in West Virginia, for sure. But at the very least, you recognize with that crime, you have the right to defend yourself. Not in New York. That's a struggle, huh? I'll leave it there. Next segment's coming up at 6 p.m. on this channel. Thanks for hanging out, and I'll see y'all then. The voters know it, and it's not up for debate. Joe Biden is trying to jail Trump to stop him from winning. From the post-millennial, 56% of U.S. voters say Biden is trying to jail Trump to stop him from winning. Let me break it down for you. Biden told Merrick Garland to stop being, what did he say, like studious or something like that? I can't remember the word he used. And to go after Trump. Biden can't win. The only way that Biden can actually retain power is through what I would describe as extra electoral activities. That's what we like to say. Extra electoral activities. That's what we call it. Did Donald Trump win in 2020? Depends on what you mean by win. And I think in order to actually understand the left, the right, the arguments around 2020 and the election, you have to understand what people mean by rigged, scam, win, fraud, etc. So I will try to explain and translate. You see, I try very hard to understand what someone means when they say a word, because not everybody uses the same words in the same way. Was 2024 rigged? Okay. What most Trump supporters believe is that rigged in this sense means they counted ballots twice. There was mass mail-in. Ballot harvesting. People were going around collecting ballots from nursing homes. And there was things like voter in the park. And that is rigged. Now, the left here is rigged, and they make the worst of the worst assumptions that, like, they assume rigged means Democrats printed fake ballots and did things like this. Certainly, there are people on the right who say Trump won, who genuinely believe that Biden had a bunch of fake votes. Possible, maybe, whatever, don't know. I think the most likely scenario is that Democrats utilized universal mail-in voting, which they had been fighting for relentlessly for a year, and then engaged in legal ballot harvesting. That is not an election. Okay? So here's the way I put it. If you're arguing who won the argument, Trump did. Who won the most votes, Biden did. Because Republicans don't seem to get this. And this is true of many Republican voters. The winner is not the person who can articulate their thoughts better or can convince the most people. It's who can get the most numbers. Democrats know this. They said, we don't need Joe Biden. We don't need campaigning. Just send him out into the basement, send him to the basement, and we'll send out the ballot harvesters to collect the votes. And meanwhile, Republicans will beg people to vote who then won't vote. That's the game. Right now, Trump's winning the argument. And after 2020, Republicans are making moves to actually try and win procedurally with ballot harvesting and other strategies, legal strategies. So they know. Now, they've got nothing left. They're not going to win. You know, let's say Democrats have the advantage in universal mail-in voting. Doesn't matter. Republicans are going to close that gap with the argument on their side. They're going to win. And now, what are the Democrats trying to do? It's obvious. Seize Trump's properties and put him in prison. The Post-Millennial reports, a majority of U.S. voters believe that President Joe Biden is attempting to stop Donald Trump from being president by putting him in jail. Per a poll from McLaughlin & Associates, 56% of voters polled nationally answered yes to, quote, President Trump has been indicted on a total of 91 counts by supporters of Joe Biden and his Justice Department. If convicted of these charges, do you think that Joe Biden wants to stop President Trump from winning the election by putting him in jail? I feel like it's a bit verbose, and you could ask a much simpler question. Are the charges against Trump for political purposes to stop him from winning in 2024? I think most people are going to say yes. In fact, this number would be higher than it asked the question in such a weird way. Only 30% answered no. 14% did not know or refuse to answer. Of those polled who are Hispanic, 53% agreed that Biden was trying to put Trump in jail. 41% of Black Americans also agreed with that sentiment. That's crazy. Holy. 41% of Black Americans thought it's a political persecution. For independents, 50% believe that Biden's suits are an attempt to put Trump in jail, with only 33% disagreeing. Now, I want to clarify here. The charges aren't directly from Trump. But there is reporting that in Georgia, they were in communication with White House lawyers. Merrick Garland, in the federal cases, did receive instruction from Joe Biden, according to the New York Times. I believe they reported that. So, yeah, it seems like the Democrats are largely behind this. The top two important issues for those in the survey were reducing inflation as well as the border, with inflation being the top issue for 23% of those polled and 14% saying the border. The favorability rating for Biden, in pattern with many polls that have been coming out lately, show Trump's favor. It was at 42% with his unfavorable rating at 55. The poll was conducted between March 9th and 4th. Well, you see, it's not just about whether or not Trump is right, wrong, winning the argument. It's about this. From the Post-Millennial, VP Harris unknowingly claps along to Spanish song in Puerto Rico protesting her visit. Stop. Once aid translates. Oh, cringe. Help us, please. Okay, let me try again. Kamala Harris shows up in Puerto Rico. They're protesting her. And she goes, claps along. Oh, man, we got a video, don't we? Here we go. Let me turn the audio on for you. I don't know how good the audio is going to be, but here we go. Oh, no. Okay, here we go. And then she gets told, you need to stop clapping. They're mad at you. Mm-hmm. On Friday, Kamala Harris unknowingly clapped to a song sung in Spanish. A video of the incident shows a group of protesters beating a drum outside the Goyoko Community Center. As a man sings, the vice president was seen with a big smile on her face, clapping along. According to the New York Post, the man was singing, "We want to know, Kamala, what did you come here for? We want to know. The vice president is here making history. We want to know what she thinks of the colony. Long live free Palestine and Haiti, too," he says. Wow. Fox News reported that Harris, accompanied by Secretary of Energy Jennifer Granholm and Deputy Secretary of Housing and Urban Development Adrienne Todman, traveled to Puerto Rico to visit residential homes. Okay. I'm sorry. Okay, look, lady, this is the kind of thing people see, and they're like, Kamala Harris is not a viable candidate for the presidency. Joe Biden likely won't make it to the end of a second term anyway. And so what? This is the important takeaway, my friends. A vote for Joe Biden's a vote for Kamala Harris, and everybody knows it. You really think she's going to be capable? I love this one from the Post Millennial. AOC falsely claims Trump ordered a terror attack on the Capitol on January 6th. The desperation is so clear, but the narrative is broken and it doesn't work anymore. Donald Trump is winning. No matter how much they attack him, it's not working. I'm talking to young people, man. Go skating, go out to the MGM National Harbor, like to hang out there. And these younger guys in their mid-20s are like, voted Democrat in 2020, voting Trump in 2024. It's plainly obvious these people's brains don't work. I think it's really simple, actually. I can't remember who on IRL was telling us this, but Trump is an opposition candidate. He's not an incumbent. Trump works as the rage. Why did Trump win in the first place? In 2016, because he was the bull to kick down the door and rampage in the ivory tower. Once Trump was in the ivory tower, people were kind of like, maybe we don't want the bull rampaging around. Can we do something about this? So they put in the Democrats. They put in Joe Biden. And oh boy, that just made things worse. I got to clarify, too. I don't think it's fair necessarily to just say Trump's a bull kicking the door in, because under Trump, 2018, 2019, people were flush with cash. It was good. That's the selling point I think most people need to hit on. I can't remember who was telling me this. You know, I hear things. It was one of the crew that they always tell people, do you remember 2018? And they're like, yeah. And it's like, bro, everybody's struggling. The rent is too damn high. Food costs are too high. And everyone's complaining, what's going on? Why can't I afford groceries? Why can't I go to the movies? Why can't I get a car? Why can't I get a house? And then remember 2018? And they're like, man, that was 6 years ago. 2019 even. It was good. How did you forget all that? We've been living with this crackpot old man who's flubbing up everything. The economy's in the gutter. It's the economy, stupid. How do you remind people? For a lot of these Gen Z kids, man, 6 years ago? Well, I mean, a lot of these, they're like, dude, a 22-year-old, they're at 16 6 years ago, and they're voting now. They don't have those experiences, and they don't remember that stuff. So I think that's what you got to convey, where you can. Somebody who is probably 24, 25, they might remember, like, I had cash, man. Things weren't so bad. I could afford to eat. Maybe you were a little young and you weren't super rich or anything, but it certainly was different than it is today. I tell you what, you want to vote in that same stuff? Vote for these crazies. But the American voter, they know. They're coming after Trump because they can't win. They can't win the argument. So they're going to win extra electorally. I'll leave it there. Next segment's coming up at 1 p.m. on this channel. Thanks for hanging out, and I'll see you all then.